And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice.
With opening night in the NHL just 40 short days away, it's time to ramp up our fantasy hockey draft prep coverage. Welcome to another edition of NHL Fantasy on Ice. On today's episode, we're going to cover sleepers, bounce back candidates, and some potential breakout candidates. Nick Alberga, Jay Conn, and Chris Meaney with you for this August episode. Pete Jensen sends his best. He'll be back for the next episode. What's going on, Jake?
Oh, Nicky boy, I can smell the NHL season and drafting in these fantasy leagues. I can't wait for it. We're just around the corner from opening up those fantasy drafts. And this is one of my favorite episodes every year. Mm-hmm. The sleepers, the breakouts, really digging deep and trying to find the value in these fantasy drafts.
Tell you means time really flies, man. But why don't you sort of break down, dissect how you guys put things together over at NHL.com here?
Yeah, I mean, Jake's spot on, right? Just trying to help the people out with some targets. Maybe you have some keeper league decisions to make. And it's really pretty simple. You know, we'll roll through some breakouts, as you alluded to, players that we feel like can take a next jump. Some of these guys that we're going to talk about have already kind of broke out, but we feel like they're going to take another step forward. And, you know, sleepers is just a trendy term, right, Nick? It's really just looking for value, you know, in your draft, on the draft board, taking a look at players that are going outside the top 125, 150. We're going to dig really deep for the people that play in 14 and 16 team leagues and try to, you know, highlight some players that touch categories. And, you know, there's a lot of good players that we're going to talk about, Nick, in terms of bounce back candidates too, just really trying to find some value on draft day.
Let's start with sleepers here, boys. So reading your list, and a lot of really, really quality names on this one. The one that stuck out right away here, Jake, was Brett Howden. Considering the playoff run he just had for Vegas, 14 goals in 22 games. And I honestly think for whoever it is, whether it's him or Barbashev or somebody, there's a huge opportunity now with Pavel Dorofeyev, now with the New York Rangers.
Well, that's exactly it, right? Dorofeyev out, and now this is a similar-looking Vegas Golden Knights lineup, but you take him out of that lineup all of a sudden. There's some power play time for somebody to maybe step up and take that role as well. So I love a look at Brett Howden that clearly proved in the playoffs this guy can score and carrying in those good vibes into this regular season. And somebody means we would never really talk about from a fantasy perspective. So all of a sudden, he's entered the conversation. I would throw Barbashev. Nick just mentioned his name in there as well. I just think a guy that we always tend to sleep on in fantasy hockey. Maybe the power play points won't necessarily be there with Barbashev, but he finds a way to contribute still even strength. And he projects to be playing, at least to start the season, means up on that top line with the big boys in Vegas. So I would say Howden and Barbashev, two Vegas Golden Knights I'd be looking at a little later in my fantasy drafts.
Yeah, and maybe even deeper, William Karlsson, right? You look at that top six, and Karlsson didn't play a whole lot last year, but when he did play into the postseason, that was a really good line for Vegas with Mitch Marner and Brett Howden. Usually when these guys have good playoffs, and you look at Howden, he had 14 goals in 22 playoff games. He only had 12 goals in 58 regular season games. You say, okay, you know, a little bit of an outlier there. He had a nice run. Can it continue? But there's a role for him, as you guys talked about. Dorofeyev is now a Ranger, so there's a role inside the top six for him and Barbashev. He's a former first-round pick. You know, he does have some skill. It wasn't super fluky. And Nick, you know, I like leagues with hits and blocks and all these things. Mm-hmm. 100-plus hits in three of his past four seasons, and he's going to have a role killing penalties. So he's going to get a lot of ice time in Vegas this year.
Yeah, that's the key too, is like people look at some of these players, and they will for sure, and say like, what can they offer me? But I think that's the important thing to stress, especially in head-to-head leagues and not Roto. And even Roto at points where I think you want somebody who's going to cover a variety of different categories. And I think Howden's that type of guy who could blossom into that type of position. Talked about Dorofeyev. The Minnesota Wild means a really, really intriguing team for me, and I don't think they're done. We'll see what happens between now and opening night, 40 nights away, as mentioned. But Blake Coleman is an under-the-radar type pickup, and I like you including him on this list. Top six exposure, I think, on the wing there with Minnesota. And you know how much I love my contract year guys, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Another guy that can touch all categories. You got to go back to 2021, but he's one of seven forwards with at least 90 goals, 900 shots, and 700 hits. And he's a little bit older. We've definitely seen his ceiling. But going to a place like Minnesota, we've seen guys have success playing alongside Kaprizov. Now, he may not. It does look like Gurov and Shabanov, they got a major hole down the middle of the ice. There's no question about that. But if he starts the season, Jake, on the second line with, say, Joel Eriksson Ek and Matt Boldy, like, that's a pretty good spot for him. And he has been consistently decent in terms of maybe churning out 20 goals. He's not really getting drafted in leagues. He may be a guy we talk about throughout the season as a waiver wire pickup. depending on his placement on the line. But, you know, Zuccarello and Tarasenko are gone. So, again, there is a hole in Minnesota's top six, a couple holes, actually.
And he tends to be dual position eligible as well, which is nice. You get some versatility with Blake Coleman when it comes to fantasy hockey. And you mentioned a couple of guys right there, Yurov and Shabanov. Nick, do you have any interest in those guys early in the season? Now, obviously, if Minnesota does make a big splash here, you talk about how maybe they're not done. And look, what Bill Guerin's shown us the last couple of years certainly looks like he wants to be aggressive, and I don't think he's done with this roster. So as it stands right now, if this is the roster going into the season, you'd have to think guys like Shabanov and Yurov are going to get legitimate shots in that top six, and I don't think the fantasy community is going to be rushing to draft these guys.
Yeah, I have a Shabanov PTSD after, I believe it was on this podcast last year, somebody intimated maybe he would be in the discussion for Rookie of the Year, and I don't think that panned out very well. He spent 1 year with the, it might have been, I don't know if it was, but then he goes to Minnesota. Again, there's still some massive concerns you guys talk about up the middle, and you'd have to think they're in on Dylan Larkin. Like, it just seems like an incomplete offseason so far, and we'll see what happens. I still think there's a couple moves to be had, and among them, maybe Dylan Larkin with Minnesota. But to answer your question, I'm lukewarm on either one of those two files, Jake.
I want to throw out another team from that division. Amini, I'll toss this one over to you because you have a player on your sleepers here from this team. I like this player. And honestly, digging into this team a little bit more this offseason, I think I've surprised myself that I might be a bit more in on them than I thought I was. And it's the Nashville Predators. Just looking at what Chris McFarland's done since taking over as general manager, basically revamping the entire bottom six. Now, we're not really looking at bottom six players usually when it comes to fantasy, but I could see some of these guys moving up the lineup. You have Luke Evangelista on your sleepers list. I like that call a lot, and I just think maybe we're sleeping a little bit on this Preds team. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs, but I think they're going to be much more competitive than they have the last couple of seasons.
Again, just undervalue. This is a top 100 forward last season, believe it or not. I mean, double-digit goals in his first three seasons in the NHL, 56 points last year, just shy of 20 power play points. He had a role in the first power play. You mentioned the guys that they brought in. The guys that they brought in aren't really going to take that spot in the first power play. I like Maverick Bork. I like the addition, and you know it should be a really good campaign from him, but I view the offseason very similar to Toronto's. Fill out the bottom six, you know, have some above average players that can play, and you don't live in your own zone. It's going to help out your top six. So Evangelista alongside Forsberg, Ryan O'Reilly, Maverick Bork on that second line. Stamkos had a good year last year. Maybe Marchment bounces back. Like there's some decent players on that Nashville team. So Evangelista, again, Nick, another guy not getting drafted. It's early in the offseason, but somebody I think will have a sub 50% ownership in Yahoo when the drafts are done.
1,000%. And I think you're looking for consistency from Luke Evangelista. And again, another prime example of a guy entering a contract year and you wonder how he looks in that top six. And Nashville's the team in general, as you guys talked about. I'm very intrigued with. I think nobody's talking about them, but it's been a quietly good summer for them. Meantime, in New Jersey, you see a name like Anthony Mantha still looking for that long-term deal in his life. But coming off a sneaky good year, 33 goals, 64 points. I like the attachment potentially to either Heischer or Jack Hughes on a line. The most important part and aspect last year, Jake, for Mantha, he was healthy. He played 81 games. I couldn't believe it, but I'm like, he did.
I usually have a computer program installed before every draft to not let me draft Anthony Mantha. It's actually worked out quite well for me throughout most of his career. But last year, we know what he did in Pittsburgh, and he was just sitting on the wire. I remember in a league, I scooped him up, and I thought, yeah, you know what? I'll ride this wave with Mantha. He ended up staying on my roster all season long. So, Meany, I do get terrified by the name, but the thing is, sure. I don't think you're going to have to spend too high of a pick on him. So I feel like in that range of the draft, look, you can afford to swing and miss on a couple of these. You're not going to hit on every single one of your picks. So I don't mind it. I think I'd be more in on Mantha than maybe I was certainly a couple years ago. And Nick mentions it as well, the attachment to some of the big boys in New Jersey. If this team can stay healthy, they should be able to score a lot of goals this year, means.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is one of those players I thought, okay, you know, career high 33 goals, 21% shooting rate. Maybe we fade him. But again, you said it, Jake. He's not going high in drafts. This isn't a player that people are expecting to have a repeat season. But I went back and looked at 2023 where he scored 20 goals. He had a 22% shooting rate. He actually does have a sneaky good shot. Jack Hughes is a terrific playmaker. Jesper Bratt is the same type of player as well. It looks like he's going to be on a line with those two guys to start the season. Nico Hischier, Timo Meier, you know, up on that top line with Mercer. So power play one, most likely not going to be a thing unless, you know, somebody gets hurt. It's funny, Timo Meier hasn't had power play 1 minute over the past couple of years. Maybe they decided to give it to Mantha. Who knows? But nonetheless, Nick, you know, playing in a top six role, New Jersey's top six is good. We haven't questioned that. We've had some questions about them overall as a team, maybe defensively in goal, but they can score goals.
Lots of Metro Division love on this list this year. Tyson Forrester is a name that really, really appeals to me. Just more so you look at the numbers, 13 goals in 29 games last year. I know it's a small sample size, but if you prorate that over 84 games, that's a 38-goal clip. And I think when you talk about sleepers, definitely a guy I'd be enticed with. Igor Chinnikov is another guy. Really, really solid numbers last year after going from Columbus to Pittsburgh, 43 games, 18 goals, 18 assists. The one name on this list I'd probably steer clear of if it was me, just because of the track record. I know there's been all this conversation that Jack Rozovic has been handpicked to play with Austin Matthews. I think it's important to stress, guys, that even if you think there's a possibility or lines even in camp, they'll probably look a lot different in like 2 weeks. I think consistency is a big thing with Jack Rozovic too here.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Rozovic. I really wanted to touch on him with both of you guys. We did see some nice moments from him at Edmonton, of course, playing with a couple superstars, which will be the case in Toronto as well. He's going to get an opportunity, whether it's alongside Matthews and Knies, maybe Easton Cowan's that guy who gets, you know, a bump inside the top six. He had a pretty good second half last year, but he can score, right? 20-plus goals in Carolina as well. So, like, what do you project, Jake, like, even if he doesn't play 75% of his hockey alongside Matthews, is he a guy that's maybe just a streaming player? Is he somebody we attack in the prop market when he's playing inside the top six? Because he is a guy that I kind of feel like he could score 25 goals in Toronto.
Honestly, I kind of like the fit in Edmonton. Obviously, now he moves on to Toronto and he projects to be playing with some pretty solid players here. Look, if he stays healthy, I'm looking at a 20-plus goal guy. Now, it's probably going to depend on league size. If I'm in a 12-team league, he's probably not a guy I'm going to be looking at a whole heck of a lot. But if I'm playing in one of these deep leagues, Rozovic is a guy I would have circled towards the end of my draft. And I think there's ceiling potential there, Nick. If you do stick with one of the big boys all season long, all of a sudden you could have one of those career breakout-type seasons. It doesn't always work out that way. I'm also looking at a lot of these players on the list that are on terrible teams that nobody wants any part of, the Vancouvers, the Calgarys, Seattle as well, I think will fall into that category. It's a team nobody wants any part of in fantasy hockey. I like to play that top player on a bad team angle, Nick, and we're seeing guys like Zane Parekh on here as well, Marco Rossi on the Vancouver Canucks. Again, not a lot of interest in the Canucks, but someone's going to have to score goals on these teams, right?
1,000%. I like the Rossi shout quite a bit. I know a bit of a turbulent stretch coming over in the Quinn Hughes deal, but he's a really good player. I think there's a potential for sure, and you guys would agree that maybe he can be a 30-30 guy this year. That's not too much to ask for. I think in Vancouver, over 84 games, they need help. Maybe you get Pettersson going. I don't care who you play with, but I think you're going to get exposure. You're going to get top-line minutes if you're Marco Rossi. And just to your point about Rozovic, this time last year, we were talking about Matias Maccelli being on that top line. It took 6 seconds for Craig Berube to be like, no, thank you. And I think as an aside in general in fantasy hockey, I think you take lines with a grain of salt line deployment because it changes so much, more so than maybe like 10 years ago in fantasy hockey. I think you're so right attacking guys like that in Calgary. Zane Parekh is attractive. I'm curious if it's Parekh or Simone Nemec, the newcomer from New Jersey who runs PP1. That's going to be everything there. But I think a higher offensive ceiling for Parekh. Broberg's another guy with St. Louis. I'm really intrigued with some of the moving and grooving they've done. And I want to touch on the goaltending too. It means you can go anywhere, but there's some really enticing names goaltending-wise from Joel Hofer, to Artur Shelovs. Even Dennis Hildeby I'd throw in that conversation with Tampa.
Yeah, Dan Vladar, again, right? Another guy who kind of underrated, undervalued. And Hofer, I just feel he's going to take the net in St. Louis. He had 6 shutouts, which was second among goalies. Binnington's on the final year of his contract. He could get flipped at any moment, maybe at the deadline as well. So Hofer, he was sneaky good last year, 24 wins. Forrester, I like the call. You know, you brought him up. He's another guy, too, nearly 200 hits and 100 blocks in his previous 2 seasons before last year, where he battled a lot of injuries. Looks like he has some chemistry alongside Zegras. Note here on Rossi, just sneaky good after the Olympics, led Vancouver in points, 20 in 25 and 11 on the power play. So they're desperate for something down the middle of the ice. And I think we're saving the best for last, guys, because the Sharks are a team we all love. They have so much talent. they brought in Mason Marchment, who could be undervalued. He was a point per game pace with the Blue Jackets, but you have Chernyshev here, you have Colin Graf here. Graf had 21 goals and 46 points, probably doesn't have a lot of PP time. You know, Jake, given what the San Jose Sharks have now, they have like three appealing lines. And then Chernyshev, 19 points in 28 games. He was throwing his body around, he was shooting the puck, and he could be linked to Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith. Like, that is a heck of a duo for a sophomore forward.
I love the complimentary pieces in San Jose, guys. I'm glad you brought that up, Means, because there's so many different ways you can go. It's not like there's one or two guys that we're all going to be gravitating towards. You can maybe pivot and go for a Marchment, like you mentioned, or some of these other names in this offense for San Jose. Look, we love Macklin Celebrini. He's going to go at the top of the board. He's an excellent player. But if San Jose is going to take that step and potentially make the postseason or push for it this year, they are going to need scoring down that lineup, and I think they have potential to do so. So I'm going to be in on a lot of those names.
Well said, boys. Let's get to bounce back candidates now. And I'll be honest, in most fantasy drafts, this is my bread and butter. This is where I get value in my draft. Just guys that you sort of forget about, and they're really, really good players. And this list is no different. You see the likes of Zach Hyman. Auston Matthews really sticks out. Thomas Harley, of course, the motivation of potentially being dealt in some type of deal with Dallas, I think, is at the forefront there. And I want to lead off with a name in Boston, and J.J. Paterka. Again, a year ago, people were hot and heavy over this guy moving over to Utah, maybe a breakout candidate, and then just had a tough year now with the Bruins. But I love that attachment of Pasternak here, Jake.
This might be my number one bounce back this year. It could blow up in all of our faces here, and it doesn't work out, and maybe the similar thing happens that happened in Utah to him last year. But I just don't see the same players in Boston that he had in Utah to push him down the lineup, right? We saw him kind of end up in that third line role, lose the first power play time. I look at Boston's lineup, there's some decent pieces here, but I think they're desperate for a guy that can really score. And, you know, Victor Arvidsson's not there now anymore as well. And I just think Paterka is a better, younger player. If he's going to get that attachment to Pasternak, I think they're going to give that some time. I don't think it's going to be 1 week he's not producing. Okay, you're off the line. I think they're going to genuinely give him some time to figure it out here in Boston. I love the bounce back potential for J.J. Paterka this year.
I'd be shocked if he didn't play 80% of his games with Pasternak. And Pasternak, we all know, is a volume shooter, and he can score, and he can still do that. But he was a primary assist king last year. He's turned into like a playmaker. So I think that's a great sign for J.J. Paterka, who's got 25 goals in three straight seasons. You're right, it didn't work out in Utah. He averaged like just under 16 minutes, Nick, per game, you know, compared to 18 with the Sabres. So automatically I'm thinking he's back in the division. He's getting an opportunity on the first line. Maybe not the first power play, given what, you know, Zacha and Geeky can do. But 18-plus minutes is something I expect from him. Get back into the 60-point mark, 65, maybe even flirt with 70. Maybe we're a little bullish there, but J.J. Paterka, I think, is prime for a bounce-back season.
Boys, how are we feeling about Braden Point? I look back at 25-26. It was an odd year in general for Tampa, especially with Hedman on that back end. But for Braden Point, who's been just a fixture in fantasy hockey for X amount of years, just he had his turbulent issues. I know he had some injury issues as well. But I think the prospects of playing with Gensel and Kucherov on that top line and just the overall exposure to some big boys puts me back in that conversation. Like, Jake, how often do we do fantasy drafts, even the one we do in person? And it always seems like Braden Point's a guy who slides down the rankings and people just draft him, and he provides so much value. And unfortunately, we all thought he'd be, again, that guy last year, and it didn't work out that way. You back in on Braden Point here?
Well, there's always a group of guys, right, that aren't necessarily the top, maybe first, second round guys. And then you're going to get your goalie run. You have your defenseman. And then all these guys kind of get pushed out that are potential to be around point per game, maybe over point per game in some situations, 30, maybe 40 goal scorers. And that's where you get the value. I tend to think a lot of times Braden Point falls into that category. So means anytime I can get an attachment to that Tampa power play that has Nikita Kucherov on it, now we throw John Carlson into the mix as well. I think that'll maybe ease the pain of Darren Radish leaving and what he was able to do for that power play. Or maybe they want to go with Victor Hedman at times. I think all the parts are there for a Braden Point bounce back. And I'll stick in the division here as well, guys. This is probably going to be my last stand with Auston Matthews and taking a shot on him. And it's strictly for where he's being ranked, means. I was looking at your rankings, your top 250 list that you guys did a terrific job with. But towards the back end of the top 20-ish, you're seeing a name like Auston Matthews. To me, there's enough value to roll the dice there. Again, he gets hurt, so be it. I'm going to have to live with that. But if he stays healthy and I get, you know, 50-plus goal Auston Matthews again, I think to me that's the definition of a bounce-back season.
I've seen him go top five. I've seen him go middle of the second round. And I think if you get Austin Matthews in the middle of the second round, you are loving it. Like, honestly, like what he can bring to the table. We know he's a two-time 60-goal scorer. He scored 30 in 9 of his 10. You look at last year, career low in points, goals, power play points, only 12. Bring in Radish. Power play is going to be better. 11.9% shooting rate, his lowest of his career. This is a vault. We know what he can do, right, Nick? It is just, honestly, health. 325-plus shots in three of his past five seasons. And even going back to his rookie campaign, 2016, he is second in the league in shots on goal per game at 4, where Nathan MacKinnon is 4.5. Like, this is a guy, even the last two seasons, he's missed nearly 40 games. He's the only player in the league to have at least 480 shots, 80 hits, and 130 blocks. He can touch all kinds of categories for you. I think he's a steal in the second round. It's high risk, high reward. Nick, this is what you said earlier when we talk about these bounce back candidates. How do you win your leagues? This is it. You get a guy like Braden Point in the fifth round. Braden Point was a second round pick last year. This is a guy who's going to bounce back. He still has a speed burst. He was battling a knee injury. These two players are the biggest bounce back candidates, I think, heading into the season. I want shares of both of them.
Yeah, it's tough to disagree on that front. I think with Matthews, we're going to find out quickly if this is maybe Craig Berube baked into this conversation. He's got Jim Hiller, he's got a familiarity with, back in the mix now as the head coach of this team. The Gavin McKenna boost, I think the assumption that he's going to play with McKenna potentially on that top line. He's a really good player. I know he's a rook, but I think there's a potential to do some strong things together. So yeah, I'd probably jump at Matthews. I'm still hesitant considering how troubling the injury confirmation has been the last couple of years. Like, no player just heads off to a different continent the way Austin Matthews did. So there's a bit, there's going to be a bit of hesitation, but I think you see the sex appeal of that name. I think it's easy to go all in. I want to get to the Washington Capitals here, guys, because I think this is such a polarizing team, and it's not, weirdly enough, about Alex Ovechkin coming back for another year. It's about some of the moves they made and sort of the guys they have in that top nine. Like, there's a lot of depth. If you're Dylan Strome, you're feeling pretty damn good about life. He's on this list. And Jordan Kyrou in a new setting. It's going to be weird, Jake, to see Jordan Kyrou in a Washington Capitals jersey.
I only worry about how spread out this offense can be. I like so many of the... I can't wait to watch the Capitals and see how this all works out. And look, yeah, they're gonna fiddle with lines a little bit. I don't even know what they're going to go with. There's going to be good players on the fourth line. I'm looking at, is Boone Jenner going to have to play on the fourth line? So they have depth and they have the ability to move guys up and down. There's only one first power play. Now, they could try to spread things out and have two even power plays, but we know means Ovechkin doesn't like to get off the power play. He's not leaving that ice. He's kind of just going to hang out there. Does that change this year? It's hard to envision that with how Ovechkin's career has gone. So I am a little hesitant to draft Capitals forwards in fantasy hockey this year, just because I don't know where everyone is going to play. And I do think that it's going to be spread out. Could lead to them being a great team. I just don't know for fantasy from an individual perspective if it's going to work out for some of these guys.
And that's fair. Look how good Ryan Leonard was last year. Ryan Leonard scored 20 goals. Is he going to be on the third line? Is he going to be on the fourth line? He played on the first power play last year, and they really liked him on that first power play, but it's hard to imagine him being on PP1 this year with the names they brought in. Look, Kyrou's on this list because he scored 18 goals last year and he had 30 in his previous three seasons. He had a season with 270 shots, 250, he had 70 plus points in three of his past five, only 46 points last year. I think the guy that we can really just buy in on, Nick, is Dylan Strome, because we know he's going to be center one. He played with Anthony Beauvillier last year and Alex Ovechkin. If it's not Ovechkin, you know, at times I think it will be, but if it's not, you got Kyrou, you have Tuck. So his wingers, it's a massive upgrade. And again, a guy who had 58 points last year and 82 the year before. I think he's a point per game player.
If you're looking for guys to identify on the blue line, Thomas Harley, we talked about earlier on, maybe the motivation of potentially being involved in that Zach Werenski deal with Columbus. He's an awesome player, plays for the national team, of course, in Canada. Dougie Hamilton, I'm probably lukewarm just because of Luke Hughes being in the mix there. You never know what you're going to get from Dougie Hamilton. John Carlson, the attachment of Kucherov, Point, Gensel, does he run the first power play unit? Is it Victor Hedman? Some questions there. And Jake, I want to get into the crease. Three really, really fascinating names for me. Jacob Markstrom goes to Florida right away. You go to the perceived best team in hockey. I think you're going to get a boost in fantasy value. Sergei Bobrovsky has been a fixture, top five net mining in fantasy hockey for 5 to 7 years now. And Connor Hellebuck's been the guy for many, many years. But by his standards, it was a down year last year.
I already know I'm going to have the Markstrom versus Bobrovsky conversation with myself in at least one draft because I don't tend to draft goalies too high. So I feel like that's the range I'm going to have to live in is, okay, the big top guys go, and then I got to make the decision between these two guys. And I don't really know what to do right now. I think Bobrovsky is the better goaltender, the more durable goaltender. But I think Florida is the better team, the team that I trust more. So where am I going to go there? That is going to be a tough one. And Connor Hellebuck as well. We know he's going to go higher than these guys. He's Connor Hellebuck. What is Winnipeg this year? Is Hellebuck even going to finish the year in Winnipeg? There's still some trade rumors swirling out there. I'm at least right now in fantasy drafts going to treat it like he's playing on the Winnipeg Jets. And maybe there's a bit of a bounce back potential in general in that Jets team who had a disappointing season last year. I'm still going to treat Connor Hellebuck as one of the top fantasy goaltenders.
Nick, you're right. These are three fascinating goalies with high ceilings. The thing is, Hellebuck is, you're not getting a discount with him. He's going as goalie two, goalie three. You're going to have to pick him in the second or the third round. So he's a fade for me just the way that I attack the goalie position. But 23 wins last year is the fewest wins he's had in his rookie season. He had zero shutouts for the first time in his career, and he had a save percentage below 900 for the first time in his career as well. And you could say the same thing for Bobrovsky, 877. It's the only time he's been below 900. So you expect him to bounce back, be a workhorse goalie, win 30 games. And that's the thing with Hellebuck, right? He's probably a buy low in dynasty leagues. You know that he's going to be one or two in terms of games played. And if he is flipped to a different team, you're going to love having him. I think Markstrom is the guy that I'm going to settle in on. He doesn't have to do a whole lot there. Florida's stingy at 5-5. They don't give up a lot. Probably in for 30 wins, which he's only done once in his career. As long as he can stay healthy, that's the thing we say about a lot of goalies. But Nick, if he can play 55, 60 games, he's going to finish as a top 10 goalie.
Such a volatile position. Again, to me, and we have this convo every offseason, like attacking the crease this year is just going to be so difficult because even a guy who's your top-ranked goaltender can be a guy who's not even ranked in the top 200 by 2 months in. It really, really is scary. It's polarizing, and those three names, I'm glad they're on the bounce-back list. But I have to go with a resume, and Connor Hellebuck is still youngish, and I think he's the guy who bounces back. Winnipeg's a team every year people sleep on. Then they figure it out. They win President's Trophies. Like, I think they're still going to be in that combo. So if I had to pick one of those three guys to draft just on consistency and where they're at, it's Connor Hellebuck. Lastly, let's get the breakout candidates. Lot of really intriguing names on this list, too. Let's start with Carolina, just because they won the Stanley Cup. And I don't know if the sex appeal has ever been there with this team in recent memory when it comes to fantasy hockey, because they love to spread the wealth. But I understand why Logan Stankoven's on this list. 16 points in 19 postseason games. He was awesome, definitely in consideration for the Conn Smythe Trophy. And Jackson Blake had a really strong showing, too.
Yeah, they have chemistry, right? You could see it in the later part of the season. Certainly saw it in the postseason. You alluded to the goals that Stankoven had. How about the points that Jackson Blake had as well? 19 in 20 games, third in the Stanley Cup playoffs. 34 points as a rookie, jumped up to 53. Can he get to 65, flirt with 70? I think so. Like, these are two young pillars that they signed at really good contracts over the next few years. Seth Jarvis, Jake, is banged up at the moment, so maybe a little bit more ice time for either one of those guys. Maybe they can sneak onto the first power play. We did see a bit of that in the postseason from Jackson Blake and Stankoven. So yeah, both of these guys. And again, when you have good postseasons, you kind of expect, like, okay, maybe they'll get overdrafted the following year. But early indications seem like it's going to be middle of the round, late in your draft, so you can get either one of these guys.
And I think a lot of your casual players, too, they'll pull up the points maybe in the draft room, and they'll see the regular season points and go, okay, these guys aren't that great, and maybe forget about how great they were in the playoffs. So if you're a little bit more dialed in, you can catch these guys. And they're coming in with a lot of confidence and that line combination that was so good for Carolina. Nick, I could get totally burned on this one, and I see him on the breakout list here. I think I'm going to be ride or die with Quentin Byfield this year. This has to be the year for Quentin Byfield to take that big step. Now, my only concern is the Kings might have to ask him to be a little bit more of a two-way guy, where he's going to be so focused on the defensive part of his game. Look, he's not going to be on Jay Kopitar, but we know Kopitar's not there anymore. Is he going to have to be a little too focused on that, where maybe that hurts the offensive game a little bit, would be my only concern. But I'm going to throw that out the window. I'm going to say Quentin Byfield, I saw flashes of it last year, still a little inconsistent. I think he could put it all together. First full year of Artemi Panarin in LA, hopefully a healthy Kevin Fiala. He's got the parts around him. Let's go. Quentin Byfield breakout season, Nick.
I'll ask you this follow-up. If you had to pick one breakout in LA, would it be Quentin Byfield or Brant Clark who's on this list? I'm more inclined to go with Brant Clark. I love him being in a Peter Laviolette system. he's going to be the PP1 QB with all due respect to Drew Doughty. And I love the attachment of Panarin, Kempe, Fiala. Like I've seen enough from Byfield in my career to have some hesitation there. I'd go with Brant Clark. How about you, Jake?
I like both of them, to be honest. I'm gonna roll with Byfield, so I'll go the other side with you on this one. But I do really like Brant Clark, Meanie. I really do on that back. I think the leash is gonna be off him finally now. Just let him go. Let him make some mistakes. That's fine. He could turn the puck over here and there. But that offensive ability of Brant Clark, very, very impressive. So I'm gonna be in on both, to be honest, guys. I'm gonna be a lot more bullish on the LA Kings as a team, I think, than most people out there. So certainly in on both of those guys. I'll lean Byfield means, but a lot of interest in Brant Clark too.
I'm starting to get fired up. Not that we didn't start the show great, but we're getting into the names and the guys that I want to draft. And Quentin Byfield, I'm completely in. This guy is still very young. Career high 24 goals last year, 20 minutes per game. And guys, he had 49 points in 79 games. When they picked up Panarin, he played 24 games with Panarin, 19 points. He had 19 points and 13 goals. He went from 2 shots per game to 2.7 shots per game. We know that Panarin is a terrific playmaker, playing in the middle with Panarin and Kempe up on that first power play. And as for Brant Clark, right, again, this is his team now on the back end. Drew Doughty's at the end of his career. I expect him to get power play time. Now, last year, LA rolled with 5 forwards. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. And Clark, again, a guy that can touch a lot of categories. One of 3 defensemen last year with 40 points, 150 shots, and 180 blocks. Heavy minutes. PP1 near the end of the season. I'm in on both of these Kings, and I think Byfield is going to be, I think he can get 30-plus goals playing alongside Panarin.
All right. I like that hot take. In the Pacific Division, I think a lot of eyes certainly will be on the San Jose Sharks, considering the year they just had, having Celebrini, of course. Will Smith is entering a contract here. We'll see if he signs a contract before the season starts. But the attachment to Celebrini alone, I think he's in line for a full-fledged breakout. And the one guy on this list that people might sleep on is Jimmy Snuggerud, guys. Like I looked at the numbers for last year, and they're sneaky good in the second half. January 1st onwards, Jake, he had 39 points in 41 games, led the entire St. Louis Blues as well, 15 goals too.
I was in on Snuggerud last year in a couple leagues, deeper leagues, and I wasn't disappointed. Maybe it wasn't quite the full-fledged breakout that we possibly expect this year with him, but I saw enough to rope me back in again for another year. I saw the flashes. Again, there's going to be inconsistencies, and it's not like he's surrounded by this loaded offense in St. Louis as well. Someone's going to have to score the goals. Now Jordan Kyrou's gone as well. Frees up a little bit more ice time, maybe some power play time for some of these other pieces, Meanie. So the Blues are a tricky team. I don't know what to do with them as a whole, but in terms of fantasy, Snuggerud absolutely going to be a guy I'll have circled going into my fantasy drafts.
Yeah, I don't know how many shares I'll have of McTavish or McMichael. You know, we talked about Berberg earlier, getting that first power play, you know, spot, I think, for the full season with Justin Falk gone is good for his outlook. But Snuggerud, you mentioned it, Nick, not only did he lead the Blues, he led all rookies, 40 points in his final 44 games from the end of the December on. And this is a guy that can throw his body around, 71 hits, and block nearly 40 shots, nearly 170 shots as a rookie, and that top line is legit. It really is. It's one of the best lines. We only saw a couple months, and I'm already willing to say that they're a top 10 line in the NHL. Down the stretch, Thomas, 37 points in 30 games, Holloway, 34 and 26. I want pieces of all three of these guys. There's some guys on this list that have kind of already broken out again, like Jackson Lacombe, career season last year, showed us in the postseason. No John Carlson, so he can, you know, get that first power play in Anaheim. We'll see what happens with Cutter Gauthier. You mentioned Will Smith, another step forward for him. And how about Brock Faber? You know, Jake, Brock Faber last year, career season, 51 points. He had 15 goals. He was awesome in the playoffs. 30 shots, nearly 30 shots in 11 games. He had 10 points. And again, when they picked up Quinn Hughes, these guys played together. Of course, they played together at the Olympics. But in 59 games alongside Hughes, 46 points. He played at nearly an 80-point pace. And another guy that can shoot and block shots as well. So it's just a good spot next to Hughes.
And I think a lot of people are going to view Faber as, well, Hughes is there now. So, you know, there's not enough room for both defensemen to thrive when it comes to fantasy. But why not? Why? Like, he's not going to get the first power play time if Hughes is healthy. But he's going to be able to pick up points in other ways, maybe stuff categories, depending on what you have. What about your interest, Nick, in some of these other defensemen? Bowen Byram in particular. Now, this is a tricky one. He signs the big ticket in Chicago. No Connor Bedard early, but we should have Connor Bedard for the majority of this season. Patrick Kane joins the fold. Now, I think I have a little bit of interest in Bowen Byram. I'm always worried about players' first year with a new team and a lot of pressure signing a contract like that. So where are you at on Bowen Byram going into drafts?
Not to mention, I expect some turbulence with Connor Bedard on the shelf to start the year. He is everything to that Hawks team. I'm not crazy about what they've added. I think they're leaning a lot on some of their young presence, and we'll see, you know, what happens long term with that. But I think from the Byram standpoint, this is pretty much what we expected this player to be, injuries aside, earlier on in his career. Like, he's found, you know, his opportunity, his spot. He was awesome for Buffalo last year. Now he's going to be the guy. And I think in a perfect world, if, say, you can roster three or four defensemen, he's probably my third or fourth option. Yeah. Like, he's not going to be my number one guy. But I think the juice is worth the squeeze because of the potential alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And you take a look at just the usage rate. This is a guy, if he can stay healthy again, you know, 25-plus minutes on the power play. Chicago has actually had a pretty good power play over the past couple of years, and they got some nice pieces up front. So he's going to be the guy there. Simone Nemec, you kind of mentioned earlier on in the show, just a young defenseman who I think is in for a breakout campaign. Usage rate should be high. Him and Zane Parekh maybe on that first power play. And, you know, he was the man in Slovakia, and I thought he was pretty impressive as, like, basically a child, Jake, last year. And that's what's going to be the case for him in Calgary, is the guy there.
I have a couple of my own to throw at you, Amin's, before we wrap up the show here in a couple of minutes. But both New York-related players here, yep, younger players, on Long Island, Callum Ritchie, and what he could do. Look, the Islanders need somebody to score. Matt Schaefer's great. We love Matt Schaefer, but we need somebody up front to take a step. Anders Lee's not there anymore as well. And Gabe Perreault with the New York Rangers, another team that has traded off some pieces. Panarin, Vincent Trocheck's gone now as well. I think an opportunity. I'm just looking for spots where maybe some young guys can step up. And maybe not a full-fledged breakout season, but Callum Ritchie, Gabe Perreault, a couple guys I'm looking at there.
I love both of those players. And Perreault, I wonder if he's going to get PP one time, maybe with the addition of Dorofeev. Maybe that doesn't happen for him, but a top six role seems like a lock. And we did see Callum Ritchie get PP one time towards the end of last season as well. So like those two shouts by you. And then I'll shout out Zach Benson for Petey, right? I mean, yes. This guy was he was a good player in the postseason. He really was. He found a way to play in a top six role near the end of that series against the Canadians. He was on the first power play unit with Josh Doan and Tage Thompson. So, I mean, he's a guy that can throw his body around, 9 points in 13 postseason games. I'd like to see him shoot the puck a little bit more, but I think that will come. You know, Nicky does profile as a guy who can really get to the net for, you know, his size. It's pretty impressive.
I mean, just to wrap, I want to give some love for a team we really haven't talked about today, and that's the Montreal Canadiens. Like, Ivan Demidov is on my breakout candidate list. I think he's got a couple, you know, more avenues to go and sort of where he can end up as a fantasy hockey player. And Jakub Dobish coming off that postseason too.
Yeah, 29-10-4, 36-14-7 in his career. There's something that has to be said for winning hockey games. He took over the net last year as a rookie, was strong into the postseason. I wonder what the Canadiens are going to do to start the season. I know Montembeau doesn't have a future there. They're going to roll with three goalies. Is Fowler going to be, you know, in the AHL? One thing we can say for sure is Jakub Dobish is your game one starter for the Canadiens, and they're on the rise. I like the Demidov call as well. And then, you know, the other goalie here that we did see a breakout campaign from is Jesper Wallstad. But I think there's another level from him, another guy who took the net in the postseason. Philip Gustafson's not 100% healthy. He's a strong target. I want to get him on my teams, and I think he could be a top five goalie this year.
Really like Wallstad a lot. Now, Gustafson is there, and I think I look at it more healthy competition than Gustafson eating into starts. I think Minnesota wants Wallstad to take the ball and run with it. If he struggles, he struggles. You probably go to Gustafson, but I have enough faith in him to draft him in fantasy leagues. Dobish, Nick, it was a great run last year, and I'm very high on the Montreal Canadiens and where this team is headed. I just always worry about these goaltenders with the small sample size and what he did in the postseason, how he can follow it up this year. But I like the guy, rooting for the guy. A lot of pressure there in Montreal, but he does have some names behind him and Fowler's in the system as well. So probably for me, more in on Wallstad than Dobish going into this year.
At any rate, very, very fired up. Again, 40 short days away from the season opener. NHL.com/fantasy, where you can check all the information we talked about out. Thank you to producer Phil Constantino. For Jay Conn and Chris Meany, I'm Nick Alberga. See you next time on NHL Fantasy on Ice. Take care.